You are listening to the weekly message from Mount Helena Community Church. Celebration services are every Sunday at 10 a.m. at the Gateway Center. Or join us live online at www.mounthelena.cc.
I'm really excited. We schedule out our Sundays quite a bit, and I've known that I was going to speak today, and I had this whole other message planned, and I was pretty excited about that. And in the last, 10 days, God just kind of is doing something a little bit different in me, and it's just perfect because today, of all days, this is a perfect day to have this message because today is Palm Sunday. And as we heard from JR, it's a significant day in history. It's a significant day for our faith. And so today, what I want to do is, with today being Palm Sunday, and as JR said, this is the start of what's referred to as Holy Week. So in a week's time back in history, Jesus is going to go to the cross. He's going to be crucified. He's going to be resurrected. But what I want to do today is I want to look at a conversation that happened this week 2,000 years ago. I want to look at this, what I would think is kind of an odd conversation because it kind of came out of the blue. And what we're going to see here is we're going to see Jesus delivering some news to his disciples. And what we're going to see is we're going to see a response from one of the disciples that I think it's one of these responses that you kind of wonder, like, should that be in the Bible? I mean, it feels like the director's cut of a DVD. Like, that should have maybe been on the cutting room floor because it doesn't feel like it goes with a tone. But what I want to show you is how much of us is in that response from that disciple, how much humanity and how much honesty is in that response, and how really that response set up the foundation of our faith. And so that's what I want to do today. But let me tell you why. Let me give you some context. Let me tell you why I want to do this talk today. Today's talk is not going to be a here's an issue and here's three steps to resolve that issue. Today's talk, I am hoping, is going to be a little bit more introspective for you. Today's talk is going to be a bit more reflective for you because this is a big week in our faith. This is a lot of stuff happened 2,000 years ago. So my goal for you is today is I want to encourage you, I want to provoke you to actually take some time this week to reflect on what we're going to read and what we're going to see Jesus do with this conversation today. So I'm just telling you, the sermon's probably just going to be okay. It's going to be kind of underwhelming, just to be honest. But what I hope is in this week, as you read this story this week, and as you reflect on the events this week, that you're going to say, yeah, that sermon was just okay. But God did something with that in me afterward. So are we ready for a midway sermon? Okay, good. All right, so let's start with a text. JR and I didn't talk too much about the sermon today, but what I love is that he read out of John chapter 12. He read when Jesus came into Jerusalem on the donkey and people were putting palm branches down. That's why we get Palm Sunday. So I'm going to read out of John 14. But what I want to do is I want to bridge the gap a little bit, and I want to tell you what happened in John 13. We're not going to read everything, but I just kind of want to bring you up to speed on what's happening here. So in John 14, this is right before the crucifixion. So what's happening is the disciples have been with Jesus a little over 3 years, night and day. They've been with this guy. They've heard his teachings. They've seen miracles. I mean, no doubt they've been puzzled by the parables, right? They've pretty much seen it all with this guy. So in John 13, though, the disciples get a little bit of troubling news. They get two pieces of information that I think, if I were them in that situation, it would rock me to my core. So the first piece of news they get is Jesus tells them, this is John chapter 13, if you want to go back and read it, Jesus tells the disciples that one of them is about to betray Jesus. Keep in mind, these guys have been together 3 years, so you're bunking with these guys for 3 years. You get to know them pretty well. And Jesus just tells them the news, one of you is going to betray me. So as if that news wasn't like rocking and earth-shattering enough, Jesus gives them more news that they have to deal with. And he tells them, Jesus tells his disciples, he says, I'm going to leave. My time on earth is done. I'm going to leave. He actually doesn't say my time on earth is done. He says, I'm leaving and I'm going somewhere that you can't follow. So put this in perspective. You've been with this guy and this group of people for 3 years. You just heard that somebody is going to betray Jesus. And then after that, Jesus is going to go somewhere that you can't follow. So it's no wonder then that John 14 starts the way it does. John 14, verse 1, says, Jesus says to his disciples, he says this, he says, and I've, let me click it here, multitask. He says, do not let your hearts be troubled. First thing, right out of the gate, John chapter 14. All this stuff's happening, and Jesus says, do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, also believe in me. Now here's a side note. This is really interesting because the disciples know that the crucifixion's coming up. Jesus knows that the crucifixion's coming up. This is a big deal in the life of Jesus, wouldn't you say? What's happening? Jesus is comforting them. Like in this moment, this guy that you've been with for 3 years, it's described what he's about to go do. And they were aware. I mean, crucifixion wasn't just for Jesus. It was a common method of death back then. They knew what a crucifixion was. And they knew that their friend, the Messiah, this guy they've been with for 3 years, they know that he's about to go do the crucifixion. You would think that they would be comforting him, not the case. That's a little bit of the character of God that we're going to see later in the message. Jesus is comforting them. He's saying, listen, guys, it's going to be okay. Don't let your hearts be troubled. He's bringing them comfort. So then he goes on and he starts to introduce some concepts and he starts to introduce some things that we haven't seen before in Jesus. And he says in John 14:2, he says, it's okay, you guys. It's okay. Don't let your hearts be troubled. And then he says this, my Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I'm going to go there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me that you may also be where I am. So, my Father's house. What's he talking about? What's my Father's house? You can say it. It's okay. Heaven. That's right. He's talking about heaven. He's saying my Father's house is in heaven. But, I mean, look at the language here. We're still in this mode of the disciples are worried, they're freaked out, they're anxious. He's still in the mode of bringing them comfort. It's interesting how he's choosing to do that because he says, you guys, it's going to be okay. How is it going to be okay? It's going to be okay because my Father's house has many rooms, and I'm going to go and prepare a place for you. Jesus is offering something the disciples haven't had so far with him, and it's something that I believe you want, and it's something that we all want. He's offering them a place. He's offering them a home. Do we understand that? Because up to this point, the disciples have been a really nomadic group. They've been going from town to town to town. And they've been seeing all this stuff, but at the same time, they've been nomadic. And Jesus even told one of his disciples in Luke, he says, remember when he said, foxes have dens and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head? That was the life that they've been signing up for. And now Jesus tells them something completely different up to this point. He says, listen, you are going to have a home. You are going to have a place where you can be you, without agenda, without rules. This is where you can be you. He's offering them a home. So I looked in the original language, and I looked at that word place. I was trying to decide, what's Jesus saying here? And the original definition of that word means abiding place. And one scholar, I love how he writes it a prepared home for a prepared people. It means somebody knew you were coming. And they prepared a place for you, a place that you can be welcome, and a place that you can be you. Think about your current home, like your actual current home on earth. Or maybe think about the home that you grew up in. How does that make you feel, even right now? What kind of culture is in your home right now? What kind of culture did you grow up with? What sort of expectations were on you? What sort of rules are in your house now? All of that makes up your home. And I started to wonder, I said, I wonder what this home that Jesus is talking about, I wonder what the culture is going to be like. I wonder what the expectations are going to be like in this home that he's talking about. Because he's still bringing them comfort. He's saying, it's going to be okay, guys. I'm preparing a place for you. But here's the interesting thing. He talks about a home, but I believe we're going to start to see some culture of the home. We're going to start to see some trademarks of that home because the conversation is going to continue, and it's going to be, this is one of my favorite conversations in the Bible. He says in verse 4, he says, listen, it's going to be okay. I'm going to go to my father's house. I'm going to go prepare a place for you. You're going to have a home finally. And then he says in verse 4, he says, you know the way to the place where I am going. So let's pause the story here. As I read this, like over and over and over, I started to wonder, like, what did the moment look like really, like on the ground for these guys? In that moment, 2,000 years ago, he says, it's going to be okay. I'm going to go prepare a place for you. My father's house has many rooms. I would have told you if it weren't so. You know the way to the place where I'm going. For some reason, like in my head, this isn't in the Bible, but in my head, I see Jesus nodding when he's saying that. I see him saying, like, you know the place. You know the way to where I'm going. You know that. He's nodding just in my head. So I've been in those kind of spots before. You've ever been in that kind of spot where, like, you're in a larger group maybe, and somebody says something like that, something that you should know, but you don't, right? And so you're faced with this choice, like, what do you do? I mean, do you fess up and maybe look a little foolish and admit that you don't know what you're being told? Or do you remain quiet and attempt to figure it out? I think I do both, in, you know, depending on the situation. But that's kind of like, he's saying, it's going to be okay. I'm going to my father's house. I'm going to prepare a room. You know the way. Yeah, you know the way. And that's when we see Thomas. Remember Thomas? If you're new to the Bible, Thomas is a character that you might know as Doubting Thomas. This guy, man, he got a bad rap. He really did. I sincerely believe that. Because the reason he's called Doubting Thomas is because later on in the story, Jesus gets crucified, he gets resurrected, he's back on earth, and he meets Thomas. And he says to Thomas, he says, hey, it's me, man. Probably didn't say man. But he says, it's me. And what does Thomas say? Thomas says, no, it isn't. I want to see the scars on your hand before I believe it's you. The guy doubts one time, and all of a sudden, he is doubting Thomas for the rest of his life. How would you like to be known for your one moment of indiscretion, you know? It's like, oh, there's gambling Bill. But the reason that I love Thomas in the scripture is because Thomas represents you and me. Thomas, I mean, you look at the lives of these disciples and you think, man, these guys, these are perfect Christians, man. They went to Sunday school every day and they were in church every day. But Thomas is different. Thomas is like one of these guys where he's just real. You know, if Thomas has doubts, he's verbalizing them. And I love that. Because what it does for me is Thomas gives me permission to not have to fake my way through my faith. If I have doubts and if I have questions and if I have just angry moments towards God, those are coming out. Because I think, you know what, if Thomas did it, I can do it. I can be real with God. And this is one of those moments that we're going to see. So, because before I show you the rest of the thing, I want to tell you, because Thomas had the courage. Actually, let's go back, because I want to show you this line, because this is really great. So Jesus says, it's going to be okay. I'm going to my father's house, going to prepare a room for you. You know the way to where I'm going. And Thomas, with one of the greatest lines, I believe in the Bible, I have to get my clicker out again, he says this. He says, Lord, we don't know where you're going. So how can we know the way? This makes me laugh because Jesus says, you know the place where I'm going. And, you know, maybe all the disciples were also nodding. He's like, yeah, we know the place where you're going. Good one, Jesus. Good one, teacher. And Thomas is over there in the corner going, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't know where you're going. I didn't get the memo. I missed the meeting. I have no idea. Because Thomas had the courage to speak out in that moment, and I do believe it took courage, because Thomas had the courage to speak out in that moment, his honesty provides a catalyst to one of the greatest lines in all of the Bible. And this is what Jesus said. This is how Jesus replied to his honesty. Thomas says, Lord, we don't know where you're going, so how can we know the way? Interesting, he said we. He spoke for the whole group. He didn't say I, he said we. Lord, we don't know where you're going. How can we know the way? And then Jesus says this. He says, Jesus answered, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. I gotta wonder, did the disciples know at that moment what a huge part in history they had just participated in? Because what had just happened is Jesus gave them new language. Jesus gave us new language that he hasn't said before. He's referred to himself now in a new way that has never been on planet Earth. And the disciples had just witnessed that because of Thomas's honesty and because of Thomas's questions. Now Jesus says, listen, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. Those are some bold statements, you guys. Think about that. I mean, I know we're talking about the Son of God here, but this is a guy that's just been with for 3 years, so I'm thinking the relationship had become common, and Jesus saying, listen, let me remind you who I am. I am the way, not a way. I am the way. I am the truth and the life. He's saying, you do know the answer to my question. It's standing right in front of you. It's been here the whole time. So what I want to do, because we're on Palm Sunday, we're in Holy Week, I want to look at, if this was so important to Jesus to make these bold statements, I want to dive deep into these three statements, because I believe there's a lot that we can actually extrapolate for our lives. So he says, I am the way. Jesus, he starts out by saying, I am the way. The way to what? Well, to put it really simply, he's the way back. He's the way back to God. Or like he referred to earlier in John 14:2, I'm the way home. I'm the way home. I am the way back to where you came from. I am the way back to God. And there's so many ramifications for this, you guys. I mean, we could take series and do studies on this. You know, Leslie, as JR said, Leslie and I, we returned from a trip to Ireland. It was awesome. It was amazing. I mean, we don't even have words to describe that trip. And towards the end of the trip, Leslie and I were commenting to one another because we were in country 11 days. And with a day of travel on each side. So towards the end, we were saying that how much fun we had with the trip, and we saw a lot of cool things and met some awesome people, and we had a great time being together with one another, away from our routine. But at the end of the trip, we both agreed that we were so ready to be back home, you know? We were so ready to be back home, and everything that home represents, you know, our physical house, and our relationships, and our people. I mean, that is home. And we were ready to be back home, especially on the flight from London to Chicago as I got the middle seat and squished in between humanity for 9 hours. So that was fun. Not enough movies in the world right there. We were ready to be back home. So as real as that is, Jesus is talking about something so much bigger than that. He was promising a way back to God. He was promising a way back home. Let me tell you something. Regardless of where you are in your faith journey, just by the size of the number of people in the room, we have a wide spectrum of people. So regardless of where you are in your faith journey, if you're a Christ follower, if you're not a Christ follower, I want to tell you a truth about yourself, that God has imprinted something in your DNA. How do I know that? I know that because our scripture says that you were created in the image of God. Part of that image of God, you have a unique imprinting on yourself. Doesn't matter, man, woman, child. You have a unique imprinting on yourself, and it's this. The writer of Ecclesiastes says, he being God, God has planted eternity in the human heart. He made that. You didn't have any choice in that. He made that part of your DNA. He has put eternity in the human heart. So what does that mean? It means that God created you, number one. God created you, but he gave you an ingrained concept of home. I think of it like this. I think of it as I think about what that means to me. It's like a craving or an itch. It's something that needs an answer. It needs a fulfillment. It needs a response. It needs to be addressed in our life. when he says, I have planted eternity in your heart, it is part of who you are, like it or not. So what do we do? Whether you're a Christ follower or not, you do this. You try to fill that. You try to answer that. You try to have a response for that because God has put that in your heart intentionally. And so what do? We try to fill it. And how do we try to fill it? Well, there's lots of different ways. You know, we think, okay, I've got eternity planted in my heart, so I need a purpose, so I'm going to lose myself in work. Or I'm going to lose myself in addiction. Or I'm going to go after the latest toys, and maybe that would do it. Or I'm going to see if I can hook up with that girl or that guy. Maybe they're the answer. Maybe after I get that thing, whatever the thing is, after I get that thing, maybe then I'll feel right. I'll feel complete. And what you're saying is, maybe that eternity in my heart will be complete. It'll click into place. But it doesn't, does it? It doesn't work that way. Because after all the work and after you get all the toys and maybe after you get the girl or the guy, you still have this thing in you that is not resolved. You still have this thing that needs an answer. What is it? God's saying, it's me. I planted eternity in your heart for a reason. No matter where you are in your spiritual journey today, God is saying, I did that. I put eternity in your heart so you would come back to me. No matter where you are on the earth, he's saying, I want you to come back home. Because home has culture, and home has DNA, and home has family. And God's saying, I put that there as a beacon, and I want you to come back home. How many visual learners do we have in the crowd? Oh, man, you're going to love this. Okay, just forewarning, I was having a little bit of fun with PowerPoint, and I asked my wife, I said, is this stupid? And she's like, no. So if it sucks, blame her. She's sitting right here in the front. Okay, so we're going to do a little bit of visual learning, all right? So here we go. And if you're listening online, sorry, we got to get the video streaming up because this is not going to make any sense to you. All right, so that's us on the left, okay? That's us on the left, that little guy. Now, you don't know what the left and the right is, but human nature, does anybody just want to go to the right now? Just because like something in our nature says, no, I want to go over there. I'm not happy where I am. I want to go over to the right. Well, let me show you where we are. So on the left, that's where we are. That's us. Just chilling out, having fun. So here's the issue, though. On the left, that's where we are. But on the right, that's where God is. Anybody see a problem? If you're listening online, there's a huge gap in between where we are and where God is. So between the left, where we are, and on the right, where God is, we have to deal with this. And I know that print's really small, but we have to deal with this thing that's saying, God's saying, I planted eternity in your heart. But the issue is, you can't resolve the eternity on the left. You need to get over to the right because you can't answer eternity without God. He put that there. And he's not going to let you resolve eternity by yourself without him on the left. You will keep searching. You'll keep spinning your wheels. We've all can relate to that. So you might ask, well, why is that gap so large? Why can't you bring the little boxes together? Well, I don't know how to do that in PowerPoint. But the good thing is, between the left and between the right is a little thing called sin. That's why we're separated. And that's a whole theological understanding, but let me just give you the highlights. God can't be with sin. And when we were born into sin. And no matter how much good you think you've done, because this was my story, before I was a Christian, I thought my good outweighed my bad. Well, we see in the book of Romans that God says, listen, all of your righteous deeds, the best thing that you ever did, you can go volunteer in a soup kitchen for a week, 24 hours, and God says that's not good enough. It's tough, isn't it? Actually, what God says is all your righteousness is like filthy rags. Think about that pile of rags you have in your garage. That's you serving in a soup kitchen to God. It's a big deal. And so God's saying, listen, I can't be around sin. And so what happens is we're on the left. That's us trying to make a living, raising our family, raising our kids, trying to get sense of this thing. And then God's on the right with a plan and a purpose, and we have this thing that we're trying to deal with, eternity planted in our heart. We need to get to the right. You want to see what happens when you try to go to the right? Let me show you what happens. Yeah? That happens. Yeah. You will fall. Because you can't do it. And God knew that. God knew that that gap is too large. Our sin is too large. We can't fellowship with God. And so God said, okay, I need to do something about this. I need to make a way because I want to have communion with my kids. I want my kids to come back home to where they were created to be. So what did he do? He did the only thing that he could have done. He sent his son, and that's what we celebrate this week. He sent his son, and Jesus says, that's why this is such a revolutionary message to his disciples and to us. Jesus says, it's okay, you guys. I'm going to prepare a place for you. You know where I'm going. No, we don't. Yes, you do. I'm standing right here, and let me tell you who I am. I am the way back. I am the bridge. I am the gap filler. That is who I am. This is your ticket back to God. This is your ticket back to who you are destined to be. All the wheel spinning and all the searching and all the jobs and the toys and the relationship, that ain't gonna do it because I have planted eternity in your heart, and the only way for that eternity in your heart to get realized is for you to call on my son, Jesus. Because then when you have the little bridge in place, where you are becomes where God is. And your sin becomes a footnote in the story. Your sin becomes your testimony. Your sin becomes something that you came out of. Your sin becomes something that God used to call you back home to where you were destined to be. But it doesn't define you any longer. Now you're not gambling Bill anymore. You're Bill who has a story of redemption. And you're Bill who has a story that God saved you out of that life because you are where God is. And that eternity planted in your heart is now pulsating. You're now starting to feel what eternity in your heart looks like because you are with the one who designed the eternity in your heart. Does that, come on. Does that excite anybody else? That is our Easter message, you guys. That's what Jared was talking about this morning. If you're a Christ follower this morning, that bridge is a really big deal. Because without it, you're spinning your wheels. So when Jesus says, you guys, I am the way. You know what? This isn't in my notes, but this is so important. I want to prepare you guys. We're going to have the worship team come back up at the end of this message, and we're going to sing that champion song again because I want to talk to the guys just for a second. You guys, one of the things that I really love about being married is John Eldridge says that every guy needs a battle to fight and a beauty to rescue and an adventure to live. And part of that is the beauty to rescue, and I absolutely love that about being a guy. I love being the guy that can rescue my beauty. Can any other guys relate to that? Yeah. It's something that God designed in marriage. It is so awesome that we get to do that. But you guys, let me tell you what. I think, and I'm just talking to the guys right now, but I think we get in a spot where we're used to being the ones that are fighting for our beauties. You guys, we sang some language this morning, and we're going to sing it again. Jesus is fighting for you. Jesus is fighting for your destiny. Jesus is fighting for your story. Jesus is fighting for you men to be the men that he designed you to be. And I think part of us, we just need to just lay down the thing that we always says, okay, well, I'm a guy, so I have to fix it. No, just let him do what he's good at doing. Because through that, you're going to be the man that she always wanted you to be. And you're going to be the man that your coworkers need you to be. My word for you guys, particularly the men in our church this morning, is let somebody fight for you. Call on God. Ask God. How can you be a better man? Because God has such a story for you. As leaders of your house, God has something that he wants you to do, but you can't do it with this pride thing, saying, I'm going to do it myself. You can't. We already talked about that. You're going to fall like the little stick man. You need that way. You need somebody to fight for you. And so I just want to prepare your hearts. We're going to sing that here in just a little bit. The worship team is going to come back up. And man, if you've ever sang that before, sing your guts out. Because you're going to get a chance to do that. So Jesus knew that he had to do something. It's in that moment when Jesus went to the cross. It's in that moment. It's the only time in human history. You know, let me say this. You know that saying that Jesus died for your sin? I don't like it. I don't think it's right. Jesus died as your sin. Yes, he died for your sin, but it's so much bigger, you guys. He died as your sin. That's why in that moment when he's on the cross and all of your sin, all the world's sin came on him, God could not be with his son anymore. God turned his back on his son. And that's why Jesus exclaimed, he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? Jesus knew the answer to that. He's Jesus. It's a rhetorical question. He's saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? Because he felt all the weight of that sin. And more importantly, he felt his father turn his back on him because God cannot fellowship with sin. But he did that for that drawing right there. That's why he did that. Because apart from that, you cannot have eternity in your heart. You guys, isn't that good news? Isn't that good news? So, I have a feeling that some of you might be saying, yeah, we've heard this before. That's fine. It's all well and good for the church folk, but you don't know what I've done. You don't know my past. You don't know my story. And, you know, for some of you, you're right. I don't know your past. I obviously don't know every person here. But let me ask you this. Have you ever driven through the dangerous parts of Chicago? Anybody ever done that? Raise your hand. Anybody? Yeah. I really wish that I could answer no to that question. But we've driven through the dangerous parts of Chicago. Leslie and I, a few years ago, we lived in Michigan, and we went on this road trip with some good friends of ours. And so this was before our phones had GPS. We use these little thing called Garmin GPS. Have you seen those? Yeah, kids, don't worry about it. But they were little dashboard units that had old maps in them, and you didn't have instantly updated maps. So we're driving through Chicago, and me and my friend Luke are sitting in the front, and the ladies are having a good time in the back. We got this van going. And so the GPS unit, who we refer to as Wendy, we named her, Wendy says, get off on this exit. But the girls in the back said, don't get off on this exit. Keep going. Stay the course. So we got a problem here. We got a little bit of a situation. We have this computer who was programmed and designed for one sole purpose in life, to get you where you want to go. That's the only job Wendy has. And she's saying, get off on the exit. Well, then we have these two lovely ladies in the back who we have promised to forsake all others in sickness and in health, and they're saying, keep going. So which one do we listen to? We chose wrongly. Luke and I, we decided to listen to Wendy. So we get off on the exit, and man, we drive through the ghetto of Chicago. Man, I have never felt more unsafe in all my life. We're getting looks, and I mean, it's the middle of the day. We're getting looks, and probably somebody was flashing their nine, you know, probably not. But we like have this moment where we're doing like the Chevy Chase thing where like we're locking the doors and all this, and we're still moving at this point. Well, then what happens to Wendy, the GPS? GPS, Wendy starts saying, recalculating, 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 recalculating. Well, Wendy gets her stuff together, and Wendy gets us back on the path, and we didn't get killed that day. I don't know your past, but let me tell you this. God does. God is well aware of your past. And God, in all of his wisdom, is telling you today, out of the book of Jeremiah, he's saying, I know the plans I have for you. They are plans for a future and a hope, plans to prosper you and not to harm you. So whatever your past is and however big you think that thing is, let me tell you this. God sees it, he knows about it, and he is bigger than that thing. Whatever that thing is, he is bigger than that thing. And the word for you today, if I'm talking to you, the word for you today particularly is recalculating. That is your word. It's recalculating. Because it doesn't matter what path you're on now. It just doesn't matter. Because you have the opportunity today to get on the right path. It doesn't matter where you are. God is telling you, you have the opportunity to get on the right path. Let me tell you this. Don't let an old map dictate your future. Okay? That's just old thinking, that my thing is too big for God. That ship has sailed. That is an old map. That is some old thinking. The new thinking, the updated, the latest operating system says that God has made a way. And that way is called Jesus. He has made a way. But you guys, that's only part of his promise. All of that is Jesus saying, I'm the way. Well, then he goes on to say this. He's saying, you know what? You know what else I am? I'm also the truth. Well, who knows this? The truth is only as good as the source, right? The truth is only as good as the source. When you hear somebody say something, you automatically saying, okay, but who's that that's telling me that? You investigate the source. And I think a problem we have with today with Christianity, even in the Bible, is we say, yeah, I've seen some Christians do some things, and I've heard some things about Christianity, so I don't know if that's the truth. And actually, I think maybe God's distant. I think he's a dictator. I think he's like the kid, you know, the old story with the kid in the magnifying glass, burning ants. That's God. Well, I feel like it's my job this morning to remind us of the truth of God's character, particularly what Jesus did, because Jesus was a physical representation of God. He's saying, you've seen me, you've seen my Father. So I want to remind us about a couple of the characteristics of God this morning. I want to show you a couple things in Scripture that Jesus did that represent his character. A couple quick stories in John chapter 8. So we've been reading this morning out of 12, 13, 14. We're going to go back and we're going to see something Jesus did in John chapter 8. I'm just going to read it. It says, Jesus returned to the Mount of Olives, but early the next morning he was back again at the temple. A crowd soon gathered and he sat down and he taught them. As he was speaking, the teachers of religious law, everybody say boo, boo. And the Pharisees, now say boo again, boo. They brought a woman who had been caught in the act of adultery. They put her in front of the crowd. Teacher, they said to Jesus, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. The law of Moses says to stone her. Well, what do you say? Let's pause. Talk about a tense moment. You know what? I've never picked up on this before reading this story, before preparing for this, but there's a really minute detail in here. Look at verse 3. The teachers and the religious law, or the teachers of the religious law and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in the act of adultery. You guys, that's intense. They caught her in the act of adultery. And what they did is Jesus is teaching this crowd, and they grab her out of wherever she was, and they bring her into the center of the crowd. Can you imagine what this lady was feeling? Can you imagine what this lady was going through? We don't know who she is. We don't know her story. We know a little bit of her story. But she had to be feeling so much shame and just outright guilt. And she's in the middle of this crowd with all these people listening to this teaching, and the teachers, Pharisees, everybody's looking at her, and they say, well, Moses says, the law of Moses says to stone her, what do you say? This lady, man. So verse 6, they, being the teachers of the religious law, were trying to trap Jesus into saying something they could use against him. But Jesus stooped down, he wrote in the dust with his finger. He didn't even answer him at that point. He just stoops down and starts drawing something in the sand. He's not even answering them. They kept demanding an answer, so he stood up. He stood up again, and he said, All right, that's fine. He says, hey, we got this woman caught in the act of adultery. The law of Moses says to stone her, what do you say? He draws a little picture. He stands up. He says, all right, I'm good with that. No, that's not what he says. He says, all right, but let the one who has never sinned throw the first stone. World turned upside down at that moment. Let you who is without sin cast the first stone. When the accusers heard this, they slipped away one by one, beginning with the oldest, until only Jesus was left in the middle of the crowd with the woman. Then Jesus stood up again and said to the woman, "Where are your accusers? Where are they? Didn't even one of them condemn you?" And you've got to imagine what this lady is feeling at that moment. And she just says this awesome thing. She says, "No, Lord." And Jesus said to her, probably the defining moment of her life, he says, "Neither do I. Go and sin no more." A woman caught in the act of adultery, brought into one of the most public and shameful moments of her life, Jesus draws a little picture, stands up, and he says, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." That is your God. That is a God of love and mercy and forgiveness and redemption. It doesn't matter what you did, he made a way. And he wants to remind you of the truth this morning. If that's not enough, let's look at another one. We're going to go over to Luke. And he says this. He says in Luke chapter 7, I'm not even going to set up the story, we're just going to read it. "Soon afterward, Jesus went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went along with him. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow, and a large crowd from the town was with her." Jesus just got caught in a funeral procession is what happened. He walked into the town, and all these people with the dead bodies coming towards him. Watch this. The woman, the mother, does not say a word. Verse 13, "When the Lord saw her, his heart," the mom, "his heart went out to her, and he said, 'Don't cry.'" Oh, man. Don't cry. "Then he went up and touched the bier." The bier is a frame that the corpse was on. "Touched the bier that they were carrying him on, and the bearer stood still. He says, 'Young man, I say to you, get up.' The dead man sat up and began to talk, and Jesus gave him back to his mother." Does that represent a God who is distant? Does that represent a God who does not care about you? No. That represents a God that says every tear matters. Every tear matters. And he says to that boy, he's saying, "There ain't going to be a funeral today. I am canceling your funeral. Get up." And he starts to talk to his mother. Did you think that mother was on her plan for today? She was going to bury her son. And Jesus says, "No, you're not. There ain't going to be a funeral today because I canceled it." That is your God. That is your God. Love, healing, restoration, that is the truth. You guys, I don't care what we see in the world, and I don't care what they say about, "Oh, well, Christians, blah, blah, blah." That is the truth. That is the God we serve. He loves you. He heals you. He forgives you. He has a plan for your life to prosper you, to give you a future and a hope. So don't talk to me about Christians and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we're all imperfect. Let's get over it, okay? That is the truth. That is the God we serve. But let me tell you something else about truth. You're probably going to disagree. The truth will not set you free. You want me to say it again? The truth will not set you free. Do you want me to prove it to you? Because that's a pretty bold statement, isn't it? Let me prove it to you. Actually, I'm going to let Jesus prove it to you. In John chapter 8, same chapter we were just in, John chapter 8, he says this, "To the Jews who had believed him, Jesus said to his disciples, 'If you hold to my teaching, you really are my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.'" The truth is not enough to set you free. You have to know it. You have to know the truth, and then the truth will set you free. This is so important, because I don't know all of your stories here, obviously, but however you came to God, I really doubt that your story is, "I went into Barnes and Nobles, and I saw a Bible, and God changed my life." That's probably not your story, because you got to open the book. You got to read the book. You have to absorb the truth. You have to apply the truth, and then what happens? The truth will set you free. Jesus did not say the truth will set you free. He says you will know the truth, and then the truth will set you free. The first sin in the Garden of Eden was that Adam and Eve believed a lie versus truth. They believed the serpent, our enemy. They believed his lie versus the truth. That was the first sin. You know, speaking about our enemy, let me tell you the truth about our enemy. The truth is that 2,000 years ago, our enemy was conquered once and for all. That's the truth. Yes, I know. In Timothy, it says he prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. And that is true. But you want to know the end of his story? If you read the end of the book, you want to know what happened? He lost. If he prowls around like a roaring lion, the end of the story is he's declawed. He's dethroned. That's what happens. He has no power over you today. Listen to this. If you've checked out by now, listen to this. He has no power over you. He has no power over your family. The same weapons that he is using today is the same weapons he was using 2,000, all those years ago. It's deception and it's intimidation. Those are the weapons of his war. It's lies, deception, and intimidation. If you are tired of being intimidated, if you are tired of being deceived, well then, go to the one who has your truth. Go to the one who created eternity in your hearts that made a way for you. Go to him. Go to God. You can hear his voice just like all of us can and say, God, what is the truth about my situation? What is the truth about this that I'm not seeing? And God will answer that. And if you're just too much in the weeds, and if you need somebody, call a friend and say, you know what? Remind me of the truth. Remind me of who I am. Just be sure that that's a trusted friend and knows God, because that's the truth that you want to hear. Jesus made a way for you. And then Jesus says, listen, I want to remind you of the truth of who I am, and more importantly, who you are. And then he says, I think the boldest statement, he says, I'm the way, I'm the truth, and I am what? The life. I am the life. Catch the irony here. This is pretty ironic. He is hours away at this point. He is hours away from being crucified. And he's talking about life. Because he wasn't talking about physical life. He was talking about eternal life. Because he knew that he was hours away from being crucified, but he was days away from being resurrected. And Jesus is saying, I'm the way, I'm the truth, and I am the life. And elsewhere in John, he also promised, he says, not only life, but life more abundantly than what you've had apart from me. When Jesus made a way for us, he ushered us into this wide open spaces, as our former senior pastor would say. Wide open, spacious places. That is life in God. No, it doesn't matter that it doesn't mean that everything's going to be easy, but it means you're going to have an opportunity for life. You guys, without God, without Jesus, without the way, the truth, and the life, we are dead. The book of Romans says that we are dead in our sin. That is us. That does not sound very fun. But Jesus made a way for us. He ushered us into wide open spaces. And let me tell you this. He put eternity in your heart. And I believe that for some of you this morning, he's calling you back home. He's activating that homing beacon in your spirit this morning. And he's saying, you've been out long enough. It's time to come back home. Because I've made a way, and I am the truth, and I am the life. So as the worship team gets ready, we're going to sing this song again. But I want you guys to consider some stuff this week. And if you have to write this down, write it down. But I want you to consider some things. Jesus made a way for you, right? He filled the gap. What side of that gap are you on? What side of that gap are you on this morning? Are you on the left? Or are you on the right? If you're on the left, I really encourage you. There's going to be a prayer team over here. You guys, they are some of the nicest people I know. And they love to talk to you. And they love to pray with you. Don't let another day go by. The left, can I say this? The left sucks. It really does. I've been on the left. I spent 20 years of my life growing up on the left. The right is so much better. The right is so much better. And there's a truth that God wants to remind you of this morning. I don't know what it is, but he can speak to you. What is the truth about your situation? What is the truth about God's character that you need to remember this morning? And you guys, life. He wants it to give you life more abundantly. We're going to celebrate that next Sunday. We're going to celebrate his resurrection next Sunday. But today I want to end that song that we sang, Our Champion. He made a way. He fought for you. I think we should stand. I think we should sing that. I think we should actually mean it. And I think we should say, thank you, God, for making a way.
For more information, visit our website at www.mounthelena.cc. Download our mobile app, available in iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and Facebook.